Again, for the record, Justice Perrier will be participating as to the disposition of this matter. He is unavailable today, but he's read the material and he will review the tapes and the video prior to our determination in this matter. This is International Fidelity Insurance Company versus 8th Judicial District et al. If the parties are ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve time, likewise, and for purposes of identification, please identify yourself for the record.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. May it please the Court, Your Honors, Counsel, Tracy DeFlippo on behalf of the petitioner, International Fidelity, in this case. Your Honors, this matter is an interpretation of contract. Back to Contracts 101, Law School. There was no factual determinations by the court below. The issue below was whether the power of attorney attached to the bond limited the authority such to that the bail agent could not post these bonds. That was the sole issue. So in looking at the power of attorney, the court can conduct a de novo review in this matter. The real parties of interest in their brief mention or challenge the jurisdiction of the court. There is no rule or statute that authorizes an appeal. This court, in International Fidelity Insurance Company versus State, 122 Nevada 39, specifically said that writ relief is appropriate in orders entered in ancillary bail bond proceedings. That's this case clearly. There was an order to show cause issued to the petitioner, International Fidelity, on whether these bonds should be forfeited. Petitioner filed a motion to exonerate, saying that the bail agent exceeded his authority in posting these bonds and the bonds should be exonerated. The court entered an order denying the motion to exonerate, but limiting the amounts that could be forfeited, actually saying that the agent exceeded his authority as to the penal amounts in the bond. Because International Fidelity cannot appeal, the writ relief is appropriate. Now, this court in All-Star Bonding versus State said a bail bond is a contract. It is a contract between the surety, the government, and the accused. You have to look at the specific language of the power of attorney to determine what is the authority of the agent. In Nevada, a surety is appoints a bail agent to post undertakings of bail. And they do that by requiring the bail agent to have a qualified power of attorney, which is also required by statute, and that qualifying power of attorney limits the agent's authority to execute any one bond amount to a specific amount. In this case, Lloyd Henderson, doing business as Freelance Bail Bonds, had a limit of $250,000. But as also part of that qualifying power of attorney, it says that you have to have an individual power of attorney attached to each bail bond. That's also required by statute in NRS 697.350. So whoever accepts these bonds, the clerk, whoever's there, knows that you have to have this individual power of attorney in order to post the bonds. They can't just take the bond without that power of attorney. Now, all the cases cited by the parties and heavily relied upon by the real parties of interest clearly state you have to look at the power of attorney, the language that's in there, and you interpret that language. You can use those cases as reference, and then you have to also look at the individual power of attorney in each case to make the determination. This court also said in All-Star Bonding versus State at 119 Nevada 47 that you cannot revise the contract under the guise of construing it. So when you look at this power of attorney, you have to determine what is the agent's authority. And generally, these bail agents are special agents because these power of attorney specifically limited the amount that can be posted, limited how it can be posted, and very other terms that are in these power of attorney. They're only one page. They're very simple to look at and read. And I'm sorry, Your Honors, I like to reserve 3 minutes. I know I forgot.
But I think, how does the clerk's office, when this is being filed, make all these legal determinations and all? What procedures should they go through when they're bailing somebody out?
I think they have to look. They know they have to look at the power of attorney. And uh-huh. I think it's clear in this case they didn't look at the power of attorney because the penal amount, like one that said $30,000, anybody knows how to read numbers, you know, that's just simple. And there are two of them, they went over that amount. They put $32,000. So it's clear they didn't even look at what's attached to it. So I think the first step is require them to look at the power of attorney that's attached to the bond. So you have to look at this power, the bond. You have to look at the power of attorney. You have to read the entire power of attorney, see what the authority is limited, and especially anything that's in bold and italics, I think they should focus on. And if they don't understand it, there's case law that says when something's in writing limiting the authority, then the agent, then the who's accepting the power of attorney needs to contact the principal and say, well, I'm not understanding, what is the authority here? If they don't understand it, they shouldn't be accepting the authority. They can't assume the authority if it's specifically limited on the power of attorney. So I think the procedure would be, one, require them to look at the power of attorney, and if they don't know what is limited, to contact the surety, which they can do, and say, what is it that they're limited to do?
But, counsel, how do we get into the issue of exceeding authority in this case, where even if it's conceded that, yes, in some cases they wanted, the amount was $30,000 on the face, for some reason $34,000 was presented over the amount or whatever, but the amount in question is equal to the two charges. We're not using multiple bonds. We have a single bond, covers two, and the aggregate amount is appropriate. How do we get around that, or what is the issue?
Well, I think the issue here is, in this power of attorney, it specifically stated that no more than one power from the surety may be used to post any one bail amount. So it's a one and one. So whatever the bail amount is what the power, the penal amount should cover that. So if the bail amount is $20,000, you have to have at least a $20,000 penal amount to cover that. If you don't, you don't have the ability to post that bond. That, and it specifically says in the power of attorney that it's void if you're exceeding that amount. So you can't do that. That's why the surety gives these power of attorneys with specific amounts so they can assess their liability as to what the bail agent is going to post. Otherwise, the agent can just circumvent that and do whatever they want. I mean, if we don't have these power of attorneys with these amounts, we're just basically saying these agents have the
ability. Well, clearly they can't exceed the penal limits. I don't think
you just write a blank check and do whatever you want.
Well, they can't exceed the penal limits. I mean, I don't think there's an argument on that. And the judge, Tagliati, acknowledged that in order to reduce the liability to the penal limits and all like that. But as far as, it's kind of interesting. It was an educational case to see how they do it because you have multiple counts of the criminal, I can't remember if it was a complaint or information, and of the robbery, battery, attempted murder, kind of a whole litany of them, and how it was broken down, and also that with the anti-stacking provisions, you know, like that, it creates, you know, interesting issues for us to take a look at. But anyway, anything else you wanted to say on
that?
Thank
you, Your Honor. And I think that the issue is that the real parties interest say that we're slyly equating bail amount with count. Well, I'm not that sly, so I can't quite do that. What the power of attorney just says, like I said, it's a singular power and a single bail amount. So let's give the example. It's a $100,000 total bond. That's what the court orders, $100,000. 10 counts. Doesn't matter. It's $100,000. The agent, assuming they have the penal amount of $100,000, would take that power of bond and power of attorney and list all 10 counts and post it. Mm-hmm. But let's say the court says, no, I'm going to set $10,000 per count. Mm-hmm. So then then under this power of attorney, the bail agent only have the power, assuming, again, they have the penal amount available, to post 10 different bonds for $10,000 each. That's what the way the court set the bail. Now, let's say, for instance, they don't do it that way. They just set the one, even though they set it's the court order separately, but they post one bond total of $100,000, and let's say they don't go over the $100,000. That's the penal amount.
Counsel, very specifically, and I'm looking at parts of the record, we have a bond for $34,000, which is attributable to battery and to attempt murder. How are we to deal with this one? Let's just talk about specifically. This is the case. This is a factual scenario. Let's talk about this one. That's what
okay.
Yeah, bond two, which?
On the $34,000 where you have the attempt murder with a deadly weapon and the battery, hard to see, constituting substantial bodily harm, the court set two different bail amounts for those amounts. So whatever the bail amount, I think one was $22,000, I'd have to look in here. Whatever the different bail amounts, they would have had to post two different bonds in this case. The court set separate bail amounts. Let's say, for instance, in this case, that one of these charges gets dismissed, okay? And so then the defendant fails to appear. Well, if they had complied with the power of attorney and posted separate bail amounts, as the court had said it, then the surety would not be liable for one of those the charge that was dismissed. They would only be liable for one that was posted. But here, by combining them, they're creating more liability on the surety that's not permitted by the power of attorney. Because now they're liable for both charges because they combined both bail amounts because they bundled them. And that's what that's what the language says in the power of attorney. It does say stacking prohibited, but it also prohibits bundling the bail amounts.
Yes, so you've added another little phrase, the bundling of, which we've been talking about stacking previously, and that's the case authority. And I was going to ask you to point in the language specifically in the power of attorney, this limitation you're attempting to take us to.
Then the power of attorney, it specifically says in bold, notice, stacking of, it's in bold italics, notice, stacking of powers is strictly prohibited, period. No more than one power from this surety may be used to post any one bail amount. Now, that is unambiguously says that you can only have one power and one bail amount. No issues there. That's the way it has to be. So here we have two different bail amounts combined into one power of attorney. That's the way the Justice Court said it, and that's the way it should have happened here. What the bail agent did here was circumvent the procedures of the surety that had in place. The sureties provide a certain number of powers to these bail agents so that they can assess their liability. So in this case, I don't even know if the bail agent had six power of attorneys to post this. They might have had the ability to post this bail for this defendant at any point. But by allowing them to essentially combine, bundle these bail amounts, not stacking of powers, they combined the bail amounts, which is against the power of attorney, and only posted three bonds and three powers instead of the six that they were required to. So now if they didn't have the six, they were still allowed to post these bonds. They might not have had the ability to post it. And with that, I think that it's clear that the agent exceeded his authority in posting these bail, and also exceeded his authority when he went over the penal limits, because it says it's void once they do that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
James Olson on behalf of respondents. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, the issue in this case, the basic issue in dealing with a district court's determination of exoneration of bonds or forfeiture of bonds, is an abuse of discretion standard, period. That's what the Blackjack case, the IFIC versus Blackjack case, held, and it is universal law throughout the country. An abuse of discretion, that's the standard, not a de novo standard. In that regard, what IFIC is arguing is an interpretation of the contract that isn't found in the language of the surety and the power of attorney. When you look, and this is what Judge Todd, district court judge, in looking at this, looking at the evidence presented to her, not only the power of attorney, but the bond itself, another IFIC document, the bail bond itself is in the record, page 20, the bond, or the power of attorney, page 21. Also looking at the case law, interpreting the terms of art in the surety, or in the power of attorney and the bail bond, the judge made a determination, as well as what the practice has been. And that was also part of the record. It was emails from a Mr. York outlining what has happened with sureties in posting one power per several counts, and it is a common practice. That is in the record, page 100 through 102, outlining not only IFIC using one power for several charges or counts, but other bail, other sureties. So this is a common practice. But let's look at the language of the power of attorney. Counsel for IFIC argues to this court that it is prohibited clearly in the power of attorney that you cannot apply a single power to multiple charges. I would defy the court to find anything in this power of attorney, again, page 21 of the record, that says that. The exact language, stacking of powers, doesn't say stacking of charges or counts. Stacking of powers is strictly prohibited. No more than one power. It doesn't say no more than one count. No more than one power from the surety may be used to post any one bail amount. That's exactly what happened. One power was used to post a bond for several charges. And the case law that we have cited, and I would tell the court, you don't see any case law cited by IFIC supporting their interpretation of this language. The case law that we have cited says when you're looking at stacking of powers, you're looking at a prohibition of taking several powers, stacking those amounts to reach a bail amount. Example, you need $100,000 total for the bail for a particular charge or charges, and you only have a power of $50,000. You take two of those powers, add them together to reach the $100,000. That is prohibited. Not taking a single power and applying it to several charges within that power amount. That is not prohibited. That is not prohibited by the case law and the term of art when you're talking about stacking of powers. And that's all this power of attorney talks about. Nowhere in the four corners of this document does it say you cannot use this power for multiple counts or charges. It says you cannot multiply this power, add it up, to reach an amount. That was not the case in the court below. The district court found that. And the district court is supported by the evidence of the document. Now, when you look at IFIC's bail bond in this, that's page 20 of the record, and the court found this in looking at the evidence below, it referred to the charge, paren S, and paren charges that this bond would apply to. Clearly, they're setting forth in their own document to the governmental agencies, this can apply to multiple charges. It doesn't say in this bail bond, this can only apply to one charge. It says charges. It's the surety's obligation to make sure that the documents they provide are crystal clear. Hidden intentions or meanings cannot be conveyed unless it is absolutely portrayed in their documents. They did not do that. Nowhere did they prohibit a single power being available for multiple charges. That's what the case law says. That's what the evidence that the district court looked at. This was not an abuse of discretion. In fact, I would submit to this court that looking at these documents, there was complete authority to use one power for several counts. And then, when you look at the history that was provided to the court, including IFIC providing a single power for multiple counts in other cases and actually paying off on those bonds, again, 100 to 102 from Mr. York, this is a common practice that sureties and bail bondsmen that they appoint as their agents have allowed. So there was no abuse of discretion. In fact, in looking at the documents, it's really the only rational interpretation that you can give to these documents, especially to allow some sort of finality to governmental agencies that have to comply with setting forth the bail amounts, working through the process. They need to have some from a surety, some certainty that this is the way this is going to be interpreted. And that's the way it has been interpreted and the way it has been used in the past. Now, and the court has already pointed this out, but the other issue is two of the bonds that were issued exceeded the power of the authority, the power of attorney, by $2,000 and $4,000, respectively. Again, Judge Pagliotti, supported by the case law, the Gill case is one of them out of the Fifth Circuit, same issue. The judge looked at this and said, right, you can't exceed the power of power of attorney, and she exonerated the bonds for those excess amounts.
And it doesn't void the whole bond.
No, exactly, Justice Gibbons, because what is the language? They cite cases, and I recognize they cited a couple of cases, where the language said specifically, the bond is void and null and void if you exceed it. They want to look at the language? Let's look at the language of their power of attorney. This is what it says. And this is the only language pertaining to this in the power of attorney. Again, page 21 of the record. This power of attorney is void if altered or erased. Has nothing to do with this case. The obligation of the company shall not exceed the sum of $30,000. Okay. Well, it didn't exceed. The judge exonerated him for that. Nowhere in this power of attorney does it give notice to third parties, this bond is void if you exceed this amount. That is very important in looking at the documents, looking at how the district court interpreted this, and whether there was an abuse of discretion. I'm looking at this, and if a surety is going to say, we want this to be void, they've got to say it. They didn't. Judge Pagliotti did not abuse their discretion in either of those phases of the case, and the petition should be denied.
And counsel, from your reading of that document also underneath that further, their note is as the stacking of powers is strictly prohibited, no more than one power from this surety may be used to post any one bail amount. There's no issue with that.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
The yes. Language as to the stacking, you have yes. No problem with that?
No, that language says only one power. That's all that was used. One power was used for those two, for that bail amount that included two charges. That language doesn't say you can only post one power per charge or count. It says the bail amount was set at 32, 32, and 34. And one power was used for each of those. It does not conflict with that language. And if the surety wanted something different, it is their obligation to say something different. They could have easily said, you cannot use a single power for more than one charge or count.
What would have happened if the judge had said that 32, 32, and 34 is 98? What if the judge has just said it's a flat $98,000? How would that have impacted how the bonds would be put up, or what could happen?
If
If, in other words, instead of breaking it down per count, it just put a gross amount for the six counts here and said $98,000 or whatever, $90,000, whatever the penal.
If it was one, if one power was used, then it wouldn't violate the stacking. Now, the different question is if they use one power and it was $30,000 and the amounts were $98,000, then obviously you'd have an exoneration of the excess over $30,000.
Okay.
I mean, it's to me, it's very clear that's the way these things have been handled, and that's exactly the way it was handled by the court in exonerating the bonds for amounts in excess of the single power, which was $30,000.
Okay.
Counsel.
Thank you. In this case, the court, and no one disputes this, set different bail amounts. Count 1, $10,000, count 2, $22,000, count 4, $22,000, count 5, $12,000, count 6, $22,000, count 7, $12,000. They were separate bail amounts. We agree that the power does not say per count. It says per bail amount. If it said per count, I don't think that any bail agent would be able to post anything because there's a lot of cases that have several counts there. And if the court had said all six counts were $100,000, the agent would have had the only authority, assuming they had the penal amount of the power, to post one power with $100,000 bail. The real parties in interest agree with that. The language prohibits the action of combining bail amounts or combining powers to reach an aggregate amount. It applies to both scenarios. We just have the reverse scenario. And the case law, you look at each of the powers that are in the case law, and none of those powers have the specific language that we have in this case. And in the United States versus Gill, which the district court relied on, and the real parties in interest rely on, the surety said, it's just our policy to prohibit stacking or piggybacking, and said that those terms apply to two use of two or more powers issued to the same company to achieve an aggregate amount excess of the bond for a single individual. Our power does not say that. In the United States versus Gill, it did not say that. The court held, look, you did not tell us what your policy is, so we can't be bound by it. That was the issue in there. There was nothing else. Other powers in those other cases specifically say you can't use powers with other companies or a combination with powers. Nothing. None of those cases say one power per bail amount. That's what it says in here. The real parties in interest point to the emails from Mr. York and the practice. When you look at those emails, it says, well, International Fidelity, there was other cases where there were several counts. We don't know what those power of attorneys say. That wasn't presented to the court below. And also, we don't know if the court set the bail amount. The court might have set a one total bail amount and had six counts there in those cases. And then the agent was well within their authority. I think because you're interpreting these powers in this case, you have to look at this case with these powers only. Those emails do not matter to this case. There is no common practice. You have to look at the powers and what the language says in here. The real parties in interest acknowledge that the clerk has a duty to read the power of attorney and to interpret what that means. There is no dispute on that.
Counsel, if in fact we find this language, an ambiguity in this language, shouldn't we apply that ambiguity against the party who drafted the document?
First of all, I don't think there's any ambiguity here. Clearly says one power, one bail amount. And apply... It is true that the power of attorney it should be interpreted against the drafter, but there is we don't agree that there is an ambiguity.
You're giving me the back part of it, but the first part says no more than one power.
This it says up here, it talks about how this whole thing is a power of attorney. So this is a power. The statutes say that you have to have an individual power of attorney. The case law of this court have referenced individual power of attorney.
The statutes in the state of Nevada say that.
The statutes in Nevada say that you have to have a power of attorney to each bond. So they know that this is a power of attorney that limits the authority. And the authority also, the power of attorney says per bail amount. Does not say count, says per bail amount. And the clerk would be charged with the knowledge. And if the clerk has any confusion on to what the authority of the agent, they are not to assume what the authorities of the agent. They are to contact the principal to understand that. And I will point to the court where
the United States versus Gill said that. But counsel, that goes back to the original position. We opine quite often that the clerk is to just accept the documents on their face, not to interpret them. So the ambiguity runs to the party who's drafted it. It's your obligation to make that clear so the clerk does not have to interpret. The clerks are not charged with interpreting. They just accept what's presented to them.
There is case law that says that it was respect to apparent authority. The person, the third party, is charged with the knowledge of the apparent authority. It is written down. In addition, the clerk, it's clear the clerk never read this because they accepted over the penal amounts, and that's void when they do that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. This matter will stand as submitted. We stand in recess until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.